I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Joe Biden spent 8 years sitting behind Barack Obama when he addressed Congress. Last night, Biden took center stage as Kamala Harris and Nancy Pelosi made history in their seats on the dais, the first time two women have occupied those places in the House chamber for a presidential speech. Biden's proposal for ending the pandemic, rebuilding America's infrastructure, reducing poverty, and strengthening the middle class are also historic in their scope. They represent a go-big approach that Republicans have derided as a return to big government. Pierre Thomas of ABC News joins me with analysis of the president's address. Plus, Ian Millhiser, a senior correspondent for Vox, discusses his new book, The Agenda, How a Republican Supreme Court is Reshaping America. The news is next. Good afternoon. Welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad that you are along for the ride today. It is day 100 for the Biden administration. Last night, the president made his pitch for going big with a package of legislative fixes for everything from our crumbling infrastructure to poverty and unemployment. He did not shy away from addressing how to pay for his multi-trillion dollar proposals, following up on a campaign pledge to raise taxes on people who make more than $400,000 a year, saying that they and American corporations are not paying their fair share. And he couched his proposals in the context of proving that democracy works domestically and as we compete with autocracies like China. The president is visiting with former President Jimmy Carter in Plains, Georgia today. He'll also hold a rally in Atlanta as he begins a ramped-up travel schedule to sell his ambitious plans. Vice President Kamala Harris is visiting the M&T Bank Stadium mass vaccination site in downtown Baltimore today. The president addressed a reduced group of members of Congress and other dignitaries, chosen by lottery and limited in size because of COVID. But he covered a lot of ground last night, and joining me with analysis is Pierre Thomas. He's the Chief Justice Correspondent for ABC News, and he joins us on Zoom. Pierre, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Tom, good to be with you.
So what were the president's aspirations, do you think, last night, and do you think he succeeded?
Well, clearly he was trying to tout what he believes some of the successes have been. He talked a lot about the COVID-19 vaccination process, which he believes he's been wrapping up. He wanted to accentuate that and to sort of build this theme that we're turning the corner and things are on the move. He spent some time talking about some of the dominant issues, including race and policing. Didn't spend that much time on the immigration issue, which he's receiving some criticism for. But by and large, I thought his goal was to suggest I'm 100 days in and I'm doing the work of the people and I'm doing it my way. And I think I'm getting some things done.
Is Joe Biden the Republican nightmare that they predicted he would be? I mean, during the primary campaign, he was criticized by many Democrats and many other candidates in that race as being too moderate and not being progressive enough. Republicans have been trying to paint him as a radical, progressive, even socialist. Is he turning out to satisfy their predictions, do you think?
Well, you know, that's hard to say. I mean, I know that they, on the Republican side, have criticized him. He's gotten zero support on one of his biggest measures, which was the COVID relief package, at least from the Senate side. What Biden clearly is trying to do is run and govern as a blue-collar Democrat, someone who's concerned about the working people, someone who's focused on meeting them in their needs where they're at. And you saw him even in the speech last night sort of double down on that notion, even as he proposed what many would say is some pretty massive spending. But his argument is that, hey, we cut all these taxes for the wealthy and corporations. They're not paying their fair share. So therefore, I want to level the playing field, he's saying, and do some programs that will help you. They'll cost money, but we're going to take from those who are better off and corporations in order to do it. Again, whether he's the nightmare that some Republicans saw, he's certainly trying to be that.
His tax proposal, of course, is nothing new. I mean, we heard about that with that very specific, demarcation of $400,000 a year during the campaign. The National Review this morning called it the most radical left policy agenda in American history. Do you think the president had anything in his speech that was shaped to appeal to Republican voters? I mean, AP counted up, I think he used the word jobs 40 times last night. Is that in and of itself, given the changing demographic of the Republican base, is that an outreach to Republican voters as well?
He clearly is trying to strike a populist tone that even President Trump appealed to, which is it's about jobs. It's about people feeling uncertain, particularly people that don't necessarily have college degrees, the working class folks. He was clearly striking a tone or attempting to strike a tone with them. But also, you can make the argument that he's trying to talk past the audience that was in that chamber, Republicans in that chamber. And he believes, and he's saying over and over again, that there's some data, polling data to suggest that many of his policies, while not popular in the Senate, and with members of Congress, are popular with Republican, some Republican governors, some Republican mayors, and independents, and Republicans who are just everyday people. For example, he will tell you, and the administration's quick to point out that, you know, although the Republicans have been trying to kill what is known as Obamacare for years, a lot of people now, including some Republicans, like Obamacare and have used it during the pandemic. So what he's essentially trying to say is that, look, I am for working class people. I'm trying to give you some advantage. Now, whether that's going to work long term, whether people will begin to see him as Mr. Spender, big spender, it remains to be seen. But for right now, he's a person who's pushing on the notion that there's a sweet spot of working class people that he wants to get to.
It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest is Pierre Thomas of ABC News. We're talking about President Biden's address to a joint session of Congress, although a greatly attenuated joint session because of COVID-19. We're not allowed to call it a State of the Union address if it's the first one. So this was basically a 100 days sum up of what Mr. Biden thinks they have accomplished and what he would like to accomplish in the coming months. Did he do a good job here in making a case for the role of government? People have observed widely that Biden's agenda is indicating a change, certainly a big change from Reaganism, in which government in general was the problem. Now, COVID-19 perhaps has been an acute example where government can be the solution. Do you think he did a good job of making the case for government intervention in society and in the lives of Americans in a way that Republicans have been opposing now for decades?
Well, I have to be careful because I'm not a pundit in that sense. But what I will say in terms of whether, you know, he made the case, he certainly was pushing the notion that there are moments when government matters. And he's making the case that right now, with a pandemic that's killed over 500,000 people, that the government needs to operate and needs to operate effectively. He was clearly trying to make that case. And he's trying to pivot and say that even as we do that and we get results, and even as the government sees you in need and we've sent you those stimulus checks, we are, in his estimation, trying to be a government that is on the side of, again, working class to middle class people. Again, the proof will be over time, how does the general public, what does the polling data show over time in terms of whether people embrace it? Most of the polls I saw this week have the president at, you know, 50 something percent, 11% or so points, you know, ahead of what his negatives are. He's not quite at the rate of George W. Bush and President Obama were at this stage. But some people are saying, given the utterly polarized nature of the country right now, and coming off of President Trump, who never got above, I guess, the high 40s consistently, that he's got some wind at his back in terms of how the public thinks he's doing on most issues.
What'd you make of Senator Tim Scott's rebuttal? He was chosen by the Republicans to do the very difficult job of, making a counter argument, the senator from South Carolina. I was really struck that just as he acknowledged his own lived experience of racism as an African-American man, he stated quite bluntly that America is not a racist country. You did an incredible series with ABC called Soul of a Nation. And as part of that, you interviewed a guy named Harry Dunn, a African-American Capitol Police officer who was in the Capitol on the date of the insurrection. And he recounted how he had been called the N-word more than a dozen times. It's really the polarity on that issue is really quite something. What did you make of Senator Scott's argument?
Tom, you know, it was a fascinating moment to watch the senator, on the one hand, talk about being pulled over by police for no good reason and being followed in stores simply, he suggested, because of his race. And that had an authenticity to it. It felt real, and that is reality of many African Americans. And again, the statement that America's not a racist country, you know, that's, you know, different people from different vantage points will debate that. I think that some people will say that the country has evolved, that it clearly there has been progress in terms of race relations. And clearly African Americans and other minorities have, you know, enjoyed more economic success, more social success than, you know, in the Jim Crow era. But there clearly are examples of the fact that African Americans in particular and some other ethnic minorities face discrimination on a daily basis and on a real basis. And we just had a case yesterday where the Justice Department brought federal hate crime charges against three men in Georgia who were accused of, according to the Justice Department, of targeting, attempting to kidnap, and ultimately killing Ahmaud Arbery while, as the Justice Department said, he was running on a public street. For no other reason, the Justice Department suggested, than his race. We all saw the George Floyd videotape last summer. So it's one of the more challenging moments that the country has faced, and one where, unfortunately, these issues aren't going away anytime soon.
And as we finish up here in our last minute or two, Pierre Thomas, speaking of the Justice Department, you had an exclusive interview with Attorney General Merrick Garland. There really is a new sheriff in town. The Justice Department operating in a very different way than the previous administration. What did you make of your conversation with him, and also of the president's mention of, you know, racial inequality, pushing to have the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act passed by Memorial Day, which would be the year anniversary of Mr. Floyd's murder? It's a different era at the Justice Department these days, isn't it?
Tom, you know, again, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed the conversation. Elections have consequences, and the American public is getting to see it in real time. You have an attorney general that in the span of less than a week announced two pattern or practice investigations of police departments, where they're going to look at the entire enforcement strategy and policing of Minneapolis, where the George Floyd case took place, and Louisville, where Breonna Taylor died so tragically. That is something that the Trump administration did sparingly. I think the Obama administration did it more than a dozen times. In 4 years under the Trump administration, they enacted one such style investigation. So this attorney general is signaling, in the case I mentioned a few moments ago out of Georgia, that they are going to be much more active and aggressive in attempting to address some of these issues that are so vexing. And I was struck in the interview, Tom, by something that I think may be informing how the attorney general is going to react to issues of discrimination. He said categorically that racism is an American problem, his words, not mine. He made it clear that he thinks that African Americans in particular have faced discrimination in housing and in the criminal justice system. And during a portion of the interview where we were in Tulsa, just outside of Black Wall Street, he talked about the notion, and I asked him about something that he mentioned briefly during his confirmation process, which is that his grandparents had fled anti-Semitism in Europe before coming to this country. And he got very emotional, choked up, if you will, discussing how this country took them in when no one else would. And he seemed to identify and understand what it means to be the other. And I think that that's going to be one of the things we need to look for, and maybe a guide for how he's going to respond to some of these extremely challenging issues, where some people will say he's doing too much and others will say he's not doing enough.
Yeah, it really was quite an extraordinary moment in his hearing as well as in his conversation with you. So we very much appreciate your reporting on all of this. Pierre Thomas is the Chief Justice Correspondent for ABC News. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Tom, thank you for having me.
And coming up, a new book on the Supreme Court makes the argument that the conservative majority court poses an existential threat to Democrats. It's called The Agenda: How a Republican Supreme Court is Reshaping America. The author is Ian Millhiser. He joins me after a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.